Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
King Charles III delivers Canada's speech from the throne on Tuesday, this day, in these last hours. Underscoring, says CTV News, Canada's sovereignty amid tensions with U.S. President Donald Trump. I welcome Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs editor and publisher, to comment on the King's speech, yes, but especially in the midst of what looks to be a friction that will now continue after the election. Mr. Carney is the Prime Minister, elected for the first time, Member of Parliament. He is a former central banker, very much a Davos figure for these many years, Bank of England governor, Bank of Canada governor, the head of a very large real estate firm, Brookfield, I believe it's called. In addition to that, as a younger man, he worked at Goldman Sachs. He's extremely well-educated and checks all the boxes for the cognoscenti. And his victory in Canada is a measure of the smart set holding on to power. However, there is this, as the CTV mentions, tension with the U.S. And what does that mean for the immediacy of the King's speech and for going forward as we deal with a changing planet with regard to energy, climate, economy, and then there's the trade story. Gregory, a very good evening to you. The relationship with Canada is intimate and longstanding. So many families that I'm familiar with came from Canada, especially my wife's family came from Canada, moving down into Vermont and then Maine. So it's hard for me to imagine these countries being different in some fashion. How do you measure right now the King's speech, not only the fact that Charles delivered it, the first sovereign, I believe, since the Queen Elizabeth, since his mother in 1957, is my memory, but also that he comes at this moment of tension. Good evening to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Well, yes, I think we all feel that sense of kinship with Canada. Even as an Australian, I have Canadian relatives, and my relatives served in Canada during World War II for training in flying and other operations and the like. So, yes, we all have those links, and we all assume in our different ways that the Canadians are just like us, whether it's just like Australians or just like United States citizens. But the reality is that Canada, of course, is a very, very different country. It has it fought for its independence and sovereignty, and it fought against the United States in 1812. So, and won that war. And that really solidified the diverse country as a single Dominion of Canada after the War of 1812. So essentially, Canadians definitely feel their sense of Canadianness, despite the fact that Western Canadians, Central Canadians, and Eastern Canadians in various different forms feel it differently, as do the First Nations people and the Inuit, the people in the far north. So King Charles, who arrived in Canada this morning on a Royal Canadian Air Force VIP jet, which went over to collect him in the UK and fly him and the Queen into Ottawa, which is a very symbolic thing right there. He didn't fly over on a British aircraft. He, as King of Canada, he came in on the Canadian Air Force aircraft. The King's speech from the throne, as it would be in London or Westminster or Australia or New Zealand or wherever, or Grenada, as the Queen did on one occasion, is not the Queen's or the King's speech by themselves. It's actually the Prime Minister's speech when a new government and a new parliamentary session begins. And it's the King saying what his government will do, or what its program is for this new term of parliament. Now, King Charles varied that by having a long and fairly important diversion, or not diversion, speech of his own, which was very, very important. He basically spoke of his love of Canada and his appreciation for the different regions and the different peoples. He spoke as literally being on the territory of the Algonquin Nation, for example, which is a 1,000-plus-year-old nation, and he referred to it as King George III did, and as and Queen Victoria and so on did subsequently, that this was the unceded territory of the Algonquin. And by that, he means that the Algonquin and the other nations which subscribed to those treaties with the king did not surrender. They did not accept that they were defeated and were part of a conquered nation. They basically acknowledged that they were partners in this. And this was basically the theme of the British war with the 13 American states, was that the king said, no, we cannot go and expand the American states to conquer the Native American tribes. We have signed treaties as partners with them, as sovereign nations. And so basically that was one of the great triggers for the American Revolutionary War. But in Canada, the treaties which the British government signed with all of these First Nations peoples have been honored. And that's why the First Nations, like the Algonquin, who occupy the area where Ottawa is, basically see the king as their partner. So they become very much supporters of the crown. So it was very important that the king got on that wavelength. He also kept stressing unity of Canada, and that's really what's at stake. The short-term diversion which got Carney and the Liberals re-elected was the comments by U.S. President Donald Trump that Canada should become part of the United States. Well, that's not going to happen because the U.S. Constitution really doesn't allow it. You have to have 75% of both houses of Congress to approve the acquisition of any new territory. And I don't think you've got 75% of the Congress voting on any subject with that kind of unanimity. So basically that's a sideshow, but it did galvanize Canadian sense of outrage and sovereignty. And they backed Carney because they felt that Carney was opposed to Trump, whereas the opposition conservatives under Pierre Poilievre was seen as similar to Trump, which is the case and would have actually been much better for Canada economically. But anyway, Carney understands what got him there. He changed to make very positive statements, recognizing that he had inherited literally a state in decline and a nation state which had its western components from Alberta west and Saskatchewan, British Columbia and the like, looking to form a western confederation and possibly secede from Canada, create a new country entirely. So basically the king was there to stop that. And the government's platform, as outlined in the king's speech, was basically opening up the domestic boundaries to trade. So that was a signal, if you like, to Alberta in particular, that Alberta wasn't going to create all the revenues for Canada and then be shut out of the access to those funds or use of those funds. Much the same in Australia as Western Australia, which has a small population but is creating, you know, 2/3 of the national exports and revenues, and yet the federal government in the East steals it all. The same story in Canada. So the King's speech was addressing those points, trying to re-galvanize things. It certainly was a popular gesture, and it was supported not only by the Liberals, who gained enormously from it, but by the Conservatives. So now that Carney is going to have to prove that he can meet the needs of the Western Canadians and basically agree to stop stealing all the money and spending it in the East rather than seeing it more unified country.
I'd like a minute, Gregory, on one detail, which is Mr. Carney indicating he was ready to support building bases in the North, new icebreakers, and a sustained investment in the Canadian military as part of the NATO. And that is a measure of his promise to the Canadian people. Is that popular, or is that going to be burdensome to the Liberal faction that voted Mr. Carney in?
Well, I don't think it'll be burdensome to them. I mean, clearly, they're looking for as much social expenditure as possible.
Right.
Now, what's interesting is that although Prime Minister Carney said that he would be talking to the U.S. about participation in the Golden Dome North American space defense system, which would replace NORAD, he basically also said that he would be participating with the Europeans in defense industrial and defense growth, not mentioning NATO as the prime driver for that. Canada has had a very, very good technological base and defense industrial base, shipbuilding, aircraft, spacecraft, very big in spacecraft. They've had more astronauts flying on U.S. spacecraft than any other country except the United States. So they're very sophisticated in that regard. They will spend more on defense. Certainly they'll spend more on icebreakers. And the U.S., by the way, has been talking about how it's going to spend on icebreakers, but hasn't really done it yet either. But what we're going to have to see is whether Carney lives up to his words. He is known for saying things that people want to hear. Mm-hmm. We have yet to see him prove that he is true to his word. And that's going to be evident. I think that he will certainly increase defense spending. He will spend more on northern areas of along the Northwest Passage and the like. But the question is, can Carney actually deliver? If he does start to deliver on some of those things, he will get bipartisan support in Parliament.
We're going to Africa. There's big trouble in Nigeria. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Batchelor.